You're listening to the audio version of Victory Condition Gaming, sponsored by Forget Me Not Flowers and Gifts in Barrie, Vermont. You can check them out online at forgetmenotflowersbarrie.com. If you'd like to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, search for Victory Condition Gaming, and you can also follow me on Twitter at DougVCGaming. And if you'd like to watch us live every week, make sure to subscribe to Victory Condition Gaming on YouTube.
That's like the ultimate goal for us as human beings, right? We want to work and not have it be work. We want to work on something that we're passionate about, something that we love. And for some of these smaller publishers or some of these indie publishers, like, that's what I'd love to see. Like, I'd love to see them just become, you know, the full-time publishers that they're making cool, great games.
Welcome to the Golf Role Playing Community Chat with Douglas Shute of Victory Condition Gaming. We've got myself, Andy Staples from the GRC, and Nasser Alalawi from the GRC. Hello, Nasser, hello. Do you want to take us away on this?
For those of you that are YouTube viewers, you know Victory Condition Gaming does a lot of videos, a lot of reviews. And Douglas Shute is the man behind it. So I'm going to start this with a question. What inspired you to start Victory Condition Gaming?
That's a good question. First of all, thank you for inviting me on this session. I always love talking with other folks that love to create content and love to build RPG communities and that are passionate about RPGs. So first of all, thank you so much. It's a huge treat for me. To start with, VCG started out as, what a lot of things start out when you're this age. I'm not going to say how old I am because that just is sad and depressing. But it started out with introducing my daughter to board games. We started VCG about 5 years ago. Yeah, she was just a little past 8 years old at that point. And she was really good with reading. She was always a really good reader, and we wanted to kind of encourage her to work on other skills. And how do you like work on social and math skills when, you know, kids eight, it's hard to kind of get that, you know, and not make it boring. I remember doing that when I was young and we had flashcards and, you know, nobody liked that. No, that wasn't fun for me. That wasn't fun for my parents, you know? So how do you make that fun? How do you make learning fun? So we tried to introduce her to board games, and that's kind of what we kind of started out with. You know, the more we played, the more we realized that she was kind of a character, you know, when, you know, she's very animated and very lively when she played. So like, oh, you know what, this would be kind of cute to put on the internet and just let some folks see how it is, and encourage other parents to, you know, maybe use games and gaming as an educational tool. And so we did that a few times, and sure enough, it hit a certain audience and it did really well. And then, you know, after a while, I was just kind of posting videos every once in a while, not really taking it seriously. I always knew in the back of my mind that really wasn't going to be a viable option, just because, you know, what, she's 14 now, and what's the thing that she doesn't want to do beyond YouTube with her dad? So I knew that we had to kind of figure out a different plan for VCG at some point. And a few years ago, about 3 years ago, I realized that there was a need for role play content. This was kind of, you know, D&D was just starting to take off and it was really popular. And I love D&D. I think it's great. But that's not my go-to RPG. It's never been. If my friends play it, I'll play it with them, but that's not something that I choose. There's so many other RPGs out there that don't get the recognition that they need. And I kind of saw a gap in the market for those. And so I thought, well, you know what, let's kind of switch gears and let's focus on the indie RPG market and just the RPG market in general. And, you know, we've been making RPG content ever since. And in the last 3 years, I kind of took it seriously within the last 3 years. I think that's when I kind of started kicking in, trying to make regular content. And we've grown to, you know, 2 weekly podcasts, a radio show, and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, it's been a really great ride so far. And yeah, I love it.
Speaking as a small indie press designer who has a kid just a year younger than your daughter, who I've also been gaming with for educational purposes. Thank you. Thank you for both the recognizing you. The educational value of gaming and the small press and indie game promotions. I mean, for me, I started gaming when I was 11 or 12. I learned more maths from trying to work out ship combat in Traveller. And working out what the length of the planet's year was, and sort of as how it rotates around the sun, you know, sort of like, you know, I'm like, and it didn't seem like I was doing any homework.
It was fun.
It's fun.
Yeah,
that's right. It's getting them to use those skills without realizing that it's work.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not much of a board gamer myself. I'm much more on the role playing games and video games, you know. Mm-hmm. But on the video games, I mean, my son loves Minecraft, and I got him to start understanding fractions by, you know, what's an eighth? Okay, well, we build a Minecraft tower 8 blocks high, you know, and then each of these is 1/8. And if you split it in half, you've got 4/8 there and 4/8 there. And I essentially, every single game is an intellectual puzzle to be solved.
Sure.
And that applies as much to a first-person shooter as it does to an in-depth board game. Because a first-person shooter, you have optimal angles, optimal moves. It's all problem-solving. Yeah. So I'm a great believer in the educational power of gaming. But then I write games. I did a degree in economics. My maths was always strong. My arithmetic better than my pure maths. And I've worked for the last 30 years as a writer and journalist. So, yeah, talking skills, management skills, yep. Language, and numbers.
And one thing I've noticed, especially since we've kind of switched over to RPGs, is, man, kids have the best minds for RPGs. Like, it's just, it's amazing the ideas that they come up with, because they think of the, like, us as adults, like, we have this built-in, like, I don't know, break for imagination. Like, we don't use our imagination as much as kids do. And that's just, it's amazing to watch kids just dive into a system and then just come up with, like, just amazing ideas. Like we lose that as adults, and it's just amazing to see. And man, I just want to encourage kids to keep doing that. Like, that's, you know, don't ever lose that.
I sometimes think that we creatively, we worry about the irrelevance. We right. worry about being original. Yep. We think that every idea has to be the be all, every new idea has to be the be all end all. Kids don't care.
They don't.
If it's the same game they've played 15 times before. If they want to play cops and robbers and bang, you're dead. You know, they play that.
Yeah.
And they'll come up with a new variant on it. I think one of my fondest memories was when my daughter was about 4 or 5. She asked me, "Daddy, will you play Doll's House with me?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure. I'll play Doll's House." So we got out of Doll's House and we got all the people out. I said, "Okay, so, you know, do you have something in mind? Is there a particular thing we want to play?" She got the children, the models of the children. She said, "These are the prince and the princess. And the king and queen have been captured." And she swept the adults away by a monster. And she plunked down one of those. Do you remember those shock-haired troll dolls?
Oh, yes, yes, you know, yes.
One of those shock-haired troll dolls and by a monster. And the prince and princess have to go and kill the monster and rescue their parents and take its treasure. At this point, she had had no idea what D&D or a role-playing game was. And I just sat there going, I'm so proud.
That's when you know you're parenting right, right, Andy?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Douglas, you've been involved in promoting a lot of indie promoters, like small and big. How is that? How's that for you?
It's good. I really a lot of times now, I mean, when I first started out, it was a lot of reaching out to publishers, especially when they had Kickstarters. I love Kickstarter. I think that that's just like, I'll tell folks that I am a confessed and self-confessed Kickstarter addict. I back way more projects than I probably should. But I think that for some of these smaller in indie press games, like this is a way for those to get out there in the world. And I think that that's a great tool that we didn't have, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, or even 10 years ago, we didn't have this. So people that wanted to put out an RPG had to just kind of, yeah, they'd pass it out to their friends and that was about it, or go to a convention or what. So I think that this is, we live in this age where we can build a community with Kickstarter and with crowdfunding. And I just think it's just, I know some people don't like it. I really love Kickstarter. So a lot of this early on was reaching out to publishers while they had Kickstarter campaigns and said, hey, you know, I do this, I'll be honest with you. I don't charge publishers for coming on my show. I want to see them succeed. And I think that's a lot, you know, that's what we want with, you know.
You do it because you're passionate about
it. Exactly, exactly. And a lot of times, you know, these smaller publishers, they want to just, they're not making money on these projects. Like if they do, it's just a ridiculously small amount. And so they don't have the budget for marketing. They don't have the budget for, you know, advertising. So, you know, let's give them an option to kind of connect with folks that might be interested in their games. So that it was a lot of reaching out to folks originally. And now it seems to be, you know, people are coming to me, which is nice. So it's been really, really well. And, you know, some folks I still kind of reach out to because, you know, I try to pick games that I'm excited about. You know, most 99.9% of the time, if I feature a game or feature a publisher on my show, it's because, you know, I've personally backed it and I've bought into it and that I'm excited for it. So it's not like paid content where, you know, I'm getting paid to, you know, just be excited and hype this thing, you know, this project up or this game up that, you know, I've never played. So I hope that comes through with the content that I create. And yeah. I hope that, hope it helps the publishers in the long run. And the one thing that I love seeing is these smaller publishers that eventually grow bigger and bigger. And, you know, now I'm at the point where I've been doing this for about 3 years with some of these smaller publishers, and they've grown their communities out and they've got, you know, all these different product lines. And it's great to, and I mean, not that I don't think that I have anything to do with their success. It's just really great to see them grow as a publisher and do something that they love, because isn't that's like the ultimate goal for us as human beings, right? We want to work and not have it be work. We want to work on something that we're passionate about, something that we love. And for some of these smaller publishers or some of these indie publishers, like that's what I'd love to see. Like I'd love to see them just become, you know, the full-time publishers that they're making cool, great games. And luckily we've seen some of that over these last few years.
And I want to say one thing, Douglas.
Yeah, you can call me Doug. That's fine.
Yeah. You have done an amazing job. Like I've been watching your channel for a couple of years now, and you have championed like quite a few publishers that I've seen your reviews and live plays, and you've done a phenomenal job. I would consider you, Questwise and Mr. Me Speaks, the champions of the smaller publishers. That's what I call you guys.
Sure. And well, thank you so much.
And you're a hero in your own way.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you to say.
One of the things that that I find as I've moved from being sort of a GM and player and into game design is that my time for learning new games or even becoming familiar with new games has dropped to virtually nothing.
Mm.
As somebody tells me, you know, have you seen this new game? And I'm thinking, no, I've been writing the next supplement for our game. And when I'm tired of doing that, I honestly, by the end of it, you know, I want to play a game that I'm familiar with, and I don't want to learn anything new. But NASA constantly twists my arms about that, because NASA is tapped into just about everything. It seems to me, from my perspective, if it's released, NASA's backed the Kickstarter or is regretting not having backed the Kickstarter and he's paying full retail price to have it shipped across.
An email from Kickstarter, and they're like, you have to become a super backer. I'm like, what's a super backer get? Do I get? And they're like, oh, the publisher will listen to you if you send an email. And that doesn't make me any difference.
Yeah, nobody realized that Kickstarter actually has a loyalty program, but I think NASA's but one of the things that he's been desperately trying to get me into is Free League game. And particularly Simbaroom. And he managed to get me in for about an hour long test of Simbaroom. And I know that he tells me that you've done quite a lot of publicity for the Free League games.
Yeah.
What is it? What was the first Free League game that you got? Was it Simbaroom?
Sure. No. So let me just preface everything that I am now an employee of Free League. So I do work for the publisher. So
that's fine. I work for a rival publisher. So.
Yeah. I always like to tell folks. So you know, So everybody knows up front that
in the words of Chaosium, we are all us.
Right. So, but my first Free League game was Mutant Gen Lab Alpha. So Mutant, if folks aren't familiar with it, it's Mutant was a really big post-apocalyptic game RPG in the 80s in Sweden, and you play as, you know, mutants and animals and like all these weird, all these weird creations that basically you're on an Earth that something catastrophic happened, and now you're these remnants of humanity that are surviving. It was really weird. It's an amazing game. But back, I think it was like 7 years ago at this point, Free League decided that they wanted to put a new like spin on it, and they came up with Mutant Year Zero. And you know, there's four books, I think now. Yeah, there's four books for Mutant Year Zero. Each one kind of deals with a different faction. Like one, you can play in with mutants. You can play as animals. You can play as robots, or you can just play as humans. And when I was looking for RPGs to kind of play with my daughter, I came across their Kickstarter that had ended for Gen Lab Alpha, which is the animal like supplement for their game. Each game is each book is a standalone game, but you can eventually just combine them all together and play all of it, you know, at the same time. So I had found this Gen Lab Alpha Kickstarter, and I looked it up, and I'm like, wow, this looks really cool. You can play as like, you know, mutant, you know, sentient raccoons or sentient like bears and in the apocalypse. And it was really kind of a neat take on things. And so I picked up the book, and man, I knew immediately that this was something really cool. Like the book itself was really high quality. The illustrations were just amazing. I'm a sucker for D6 dice pool, you know, mechanics with RPGs. I always loved the Star Wars RPG growing up because I'm a big Star Wars fan. So, you know, anytime a game can kind of use D6 dice pools, it's usually I'm pretty on board with it. And yeah, so I picked up a copy of that, was a big fan of that game. And then they came out with another game. I'm trying to think when I had, I think it was Coriolis. It might have been.
Was it Tales from the Loop, I think, is also there.
Tales from the Loop was also one of them. Basically, whatever they had for their next Kickstarter after that, I kind of kept an eye on freely because I don't know if folks are aware, but you can actually follow publishers on Kickstarter. So whenever they launch another item or another project, it alerts you. Because they want you to keep spending money on their platform. So I followed them immediately. And once they had their next Kickstarter, it was... pretty sure it was Coriolis, and that's a sci-fi RPG, which was really I was really interested in. And I said, hey, you know, I reached out to him and I said, hey, this is what I do. I'd love to have someone from your company come on and just chat about, you know, Coriolis. And it was from there that I just started picking up everything. I don't think I have an RPG that they haven't put out yet. So
Coriolis is a science fiction game with a Arabian twist, isn't it?
It is. It's
very, very close. It's basic kind of elevator pitch. Yeah.
Yeah. I tell folks if you like Firefly and Arabian Nights, like that's what it is combined. It's a great game. And the great thing about it now is that Free League actually owns that IP. Originally, it was owned by Paradox Interactive when they put out the RPG and they had to get the license for it. But now they've brought that in house. So I think you're going to see more and more things with that Coriolis license, which is really great because I think that's one of their more underrated games.
So you're saying that the first game was starting back in the 80s. So like, to me, it seems like over the last 3 to 4 years, I suppose, maybe 3 to 5 years, Free League has just sort of come out of nowhere and just producing masses of great games. But really, from what you're saying, it's been chugging away since the 80s and presumably publishing in Swedish. So it's only now that it's really hitting the English language gaming world in a big way.
Well, the original Mutant game was not actually put out by Free League. That was put out by another publisher. And then that game kind of, yeah, it was really well loved in the 80s. And then, you know, Free League started out about 8 or 9 years ago. And then that was like their first foray into the role-playing game was a new version of this game that was really well loved and still is loved in Sweden. And so they put out Mutant Year Zero.
In that case, presumably they just write quicker than I do. I hate them already. Is this something that kind of unites all of the Free League games? Because it seems like it seems to me at the moment that they can almost do no wrong. It's kind of like Chaosium of the late 70s, early 1980s, you know. The design house with the Midas touch, you know.
I really think that they love they're fans of RPGs. They grew up in the late 80s and 90s as big RPG players, and so that they want to make books and create games that RPG players and GMs are going to love, and they do that with, you know, their art. They do that with the quality of their books. They do that with the systems that they use. Most of their games use this engine called the Year Zero engine, which again, like I said, it's a D6 dice pool system. It's really more narrative than it is, you know, crunch for how you play. And they just, they tap into these artists and IPs that people just want to play in. And so I think that, you know, some of it is, you know, luck. You know, you can tell, you know, that's just the way it is in this industry. And then some of it's just, okay, well, what would I want to play or what would I want to buy if this were on the shelf? And so they really kind of take that into consideration. And yeah, they seem to be doing pretty well, knock on wood. And you know, they keep growing and hopefully we'll see even more success, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line.
It's an amazing, Free League is an amazing company. Like, if I were like, I think earlier the marketing wasn't that, like, as strong as it is right now. But right now, like if you look at the last couple of years, Doug, that they every year they produce a game, it has to win an award, either win the Ennies or it has to win some type of award. That just tells you something about that about them as publishers.
Yeah, I mean that's not really what I mean. They're always grateful that that they win these awards and you know the accolades come in, but that's you know they just want to make sure that people enjoy the products that they put out. One thing that I'll just kind of be honest with folks that you know, one of the reasons why I was brought on was because they wanted to expand a lot of their they wanted to make sure that the marketing in the States here was effective and was, you know, getting out there. They have a really great presence in Sweden. They have a really great presence in the UK. So they were like, you know, getting over here into the States was a little tough because, I mean, let's face it, you know, anything that's not D&D or even Pathfinder for that matter, it's really, really hard to get on shelves. And, you know, I'm glad that they thought that I could help them in that regard. It's always, you know, an honor to be, you know, that kind of, you know, thought of in that regard. So yeah, I've been doing their US events. I was supposed to do Gen Con and Origins this year. And of course that didn't happen. In a few weeks, I would have done PAX Unplugged. I did PAX Unplugged for them last year. I did it with them last year. I did PAX East and Gamma Expo and yeah, it was supposed to be a really, really big year for being at all these major conventions for Free League, because I think they've realized that, hey, you know what, we kind of need to be there and it's now we've got, you know, everything else going on in the world and can't be there, but hopefully we'll be there soon again and we'll be able to get all these games and more people's hands at conventions and now I do a lot of the marketing for their YouTube channel, which is really, really great.
I think you're doing an amazing job for them.
Oh, thank you.
I watched I think it was a couple of weeks ago where you did their con recently.
We did, that was actually that's a funny story. Back in that was something that I pitched to them back in April, and that was back before all these online conventions like popped up and I said, you know, hey, it doesn't look like this is going to change anywhere in the States anytime soon. And I had actually just done VCGCon in April. I was let go from my job and I'm like, hey, you know what, rather than get sad and get depressed at home, let's hit YouTube. Let's just kind of put content out there. Let's make it like a big, you know, marathon for days, get different publishers involved. And it was an awesome experience. I was very tired by the end of the day, over the next few days, but it was great. And I'm like, hey, you know what, we need to kind of do something for this for Free League, because I don't see this, you know, I don't see whatever, you know, what's going on in the world ending anytime soon. And so I emailed Thomas and I said, Thomas, is this something that you think we should do? And he's like, yeah, I think that is, we just need to figure out the right time to do it. And then as we were trying to figure out dates for the Free League showcase, we didn't want to call it a con because it's not really a con. We weren't really inviting a whole bunch of people to come play games and everything. We wanted to just kind of showcase all the different games that Free League has. And, you know, Gen Con started going, you know, Origins was supposed to go online. Gen Con went online, UK Games Expo. So like all these conventions were all going online. And of course, all these little smaller conventions as well that, you know, that were regular throughout the States. So like all these weekends started getting booked and we're like, well, what are we going to do? And so we finally decided to do it. And I think it was like September. I can't remember. I think it was September.
A couple of weeks ago, I think I attended one of them, one of the panels.
Yeah,
I love it. I love it when you can't remember something that was, you know, sort of maybe 6 weeks ago. It's hard. It's,
man, I tell you, these life. Days and weeks just kind of blur at this point. I you know, it's yep. Like, it's one of those things where, you know, if I get to leave the house, it seems like a big event at this point.
Same thing for me.
Try to find some sort of silver lining in everything that's going on. You don't want to, you know, this whole situation kind of is not great, but you try to find, you know, the positives out of it. And you know, like you said, it's definitely brought us together, especially RPG players. It's brought us together as a community and as people and as groups and as players. And I think that's only going to be a positive thing once this is all said and done, you know, once it's all over and dealt with and we can actually get together in person again. I think we're still going to be getting together online. You know, I think it won't have that stigma that it did previously. And I think it's only going to be a positive for the RPG industry.
Yeah, I would hate to see us lose it.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think there's something that came about now. We don't want to lose that.
Right.
So I think from our GRC, we decided, like, if we're not going to do this as often, but we're still going to keep doing these recorded sessions or live sessions, panels when we can. One thing I noticed and I want to compliment you on is you've done that news segment for Free League recently. Me and Andy are professionals in marketing, so I can.
I'm not marketing. I'm comms. It's a very limited subset.
You know your marketing.
I don't know all the. I don't know all the marketing analytics software.
I think I can recognize the genius behind that. Like, because I was thinking, what are they going to do next? Now, I don't need to go anywhere. I don't need to go look up an article, all I have to do is just tune in to the channel and see what is going to be next. And that was a stroke of genius.
Oh, thank you so much. That was, just to give folks an idea, like the way to have a successful YouTube channel is to create content, you know, on a regular basis. On usually you have a scheduled content, scheduled content every week. And part of that was when I took over the Free League YouTube channel was like, okay, we should have like regular content every month. And, you know, regardless of what's coming out or what's being released, we should have these. And this was something, an idea that I came up with probably about a month ago, was, hey, we should have a Free League update every month. Because as I was sitting here, I was thinking, we've got this pledge manager open, we've got this Kickstarter that's ending, we've got this product that's up for pre-order, we've got this product that just hit the web store. Like, there's just so, like, again, this kind of goes back to being able to watch a publisher grow from something rather small, where they'd have like one or two releases, you know, a quarter, to, wow, we've got a whole bunch of stuff. How do we make sure that everybody is aware of all of these items that we've got going on, all these projects we've got going on? So that was, I appreciate the feedback on the Free League update, because that was exactly what we wanted to do and make sure everyone was aware. You know, you can only hit so much with social media posts, and, you know, you just like, let's give folks one spot to see where everything is, you know, what's available right now.
And it's
your schedule is busy enough that you start needing a communications calendar, then, you know, you're doing okay.
Because exactly. Here's the thing. It's cool to know what, like your favorite publisher, what are they doing right now? What are they working on? What's coming up next? And that's for me, that's like marketing genius.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That's very kind of you to say.
So one of the things that we'd got on the list here, and I'm going to try and wrong foot NASA here a little bit, because he loves doing it to me, is we'd ask you to share a few GMing tips. Some of your favorite GM tips. So what I'm suggesting to try and wrong foot NASA a little bit is, why don't we share some? Let's go around the board. So Douglas, okay. do you want to lead us off, since you're prepped for this?
GM tips. I guess my GM tip. I did see this question. I didn't really think too much about it before I came on. I'm going to be honest.
Then wing it. Be like a good GM and wing it.
I think that was going to be my suggestion. You know, don't get too wrapped up like in the fine details, and like don't railroad your players. Like, yeah, you might have an idea, but and you might have a direction you want a story to go or a session to go, but don't get frustrated when it doesn't, because if they're anything like the contributors on VCG, we're going to chase red hats all over the place, and we're totally going to go, you know, way off and way around the intended storyline. So just be flexible, be okay with your players getting ridiculous. I know yes, try to keep them on the rails, but don't try to railroad them. Yeah, try not to keep them railroad, because that's just not fun. Let them enjoy, you know, creating their own story. Even though you've got a story in your mind, it might not be what your players come up with, and it might not be the story that your players ultimately want to create.
Suddenly, red hats are significant to this adventure.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, so, you know, be flexible with
that's what I like to call, I think, games masters create situations, not stories. Yes. Players exactly. create stories. Play exactly. to see what happens.
Yes.
NASA, what's your top tip of the day?
I'm going to steal one from Andy Staples' book.
Oh, great. I hope it's not the one I was planning on using.
Yeah. So I heard Andy Staples say this once. He's like, sometimes all you have to do is listen to your players, and they're going to give you your next cue to the adventure. And that might give you something better than you were thinking.
I love that trick. Yeah.
I love that. Yep.
Steal the ideas from the players. And what I like best about it is when you come up with your plot, and then the players are discussing what could happen, and they come up with something that's so cool, you're thinking, yes, that's what's happening now. That's the reason behind it. And then they reject it. And you've already decided to change everything, so it's that. And you're like, oh, it's even better. They'll never figure this out now. So for me, I'm gonna give a setting tip, a bit of a narration tip. We have five senses. Try and appeal to three of them in a description. Sight and sound are your usual main senses. Smell is probably the next most common, but have a look at where you can get touch in there at least, and taste. Well, you know, unless it's the tasting the coppery tang of blood in the air, you probably have to wait until a player has their character lick something for that. And there we run into lines and veils. We draw a veil over whatever PCs are going to lick. But it's even cooler if you can do without one of those senses. Take away one of the main ones. In darkness, sound and smell become that much more important. Touch you can often use for temperature, or a sliminess of as your hand brushes against a dungeon wall or something.
You're playing aliens.
Yeah. So try for three senses in a description. Now I say that as one of my tips, as NASA knows, because I've run many games for him. What I always qualify by that by saying it's a great idea, and I wish I could remember to do that more often in play. You got another one for us, Douglas? We go around a couple of times.
Oh, let me think here. Wow. Okay. Try to read the room, like that, your group that, as you're playing, like some people really like, I've played Alien with players that aren't fans of Alien, and it's turned like more comedic in certain sessions. So, you know, as long as everybody else is okay with that, that's okay. Let it go. Like, you know, just try to, so if players are being silly and being crazy and, you know, they've got jokes that they like, okay, yeah. But if there are players that are like really into it, and like, I've had players that have played alien that like, that's what they want. They want to get killed. They want, you know, they want that alien experience. Like, and they want, like, try to read your players more than anything else. I guess that's, I don't know. That's kind of one thing that I try to do just when I GM is, you know, make sure I'm creating an experience that my players expect and that they seem to be, you know, they come to the table expecting that more than anything else. Again, it kind of goes back to that whole flexibility thing. Like, you just kind of have to figure out, you know, again, what you have in your mind is not always necessarily what your players want to play. So be flexible with that. I'm trying to think of what else I could tell you. I totally forgot that this question was going to be in this session, but yeah.
So one top tip would be do your prep.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Prep is fine. Absolutely. Definitely do that. I'm notorious for not prepping a lot of times, but
I think my worst was going in to run a demo game at a convention, realizing that I hadn't done any prep work, and I ran it based on three names scribbled down on the back of an envelope.
The best way to run it, basically.
But you know what? That is the, like, I've had some, like, some of my best, like, RPG sessions are ones that, like, I had no idea. In fact, here's something that I actually, we as VCG last year, I came up with this convention show where we do this live show at conventions called Whose RPG Is It Anyway? I don't know, are you familiar with whose line is it anyway?
Yeah, I am.
It was an RPG session that was totally made up on the fly by suggestions from the crowd. So
cool idea.
The players would come to the table, to the session, they'd be on a stage, they'd have their characters, but the setting, the plot, everything was just made up by suggestions from the crowd. And so, like, we'd start out the session and be like, okay, where do you want this to take place? Like, what? And like, the audience would just give us ideas, and they would play for 2 hours in the setting that an audience would make up. And it was some of the best sessions that I've, and it just was crazy, because we'd have all sorts of different things, because we'd have all those little, you know, Whose Line games, kind of where I'd tell the players, okay, well, you can only interact in this scene now using one word or two words, okay, three words, you know, so it was a lot of fun, and yeah, right. It was just.
I think it's the randomness of it that kind of created the situations.
Exactly. Exactly. It created some situations that, like, never, like, we played in one, we had one session at, we played at a con in New York, and we played in, like, the city that, or the town that the con was in. And it was like time traveling Sasquatches, like and it was like, that's so cool. Weird. It was like the weirdest session but it was just so funny, and the audience was so into it because it was theirs, you know. It was like, not only were the players making the story, but the audience was making the story, and it was so much fun. And I miss, and yeah, and it,
there's a really good lesson about player engagement in that, and sure. I think I need to play a game like the one you've just described, not once, but need, because I get really possessive over settings and
okay.
World backgrounds and what have you. You know, it's mine. My job is to create this. No, you have to create a character that's in keeping with my setting. You know, I love world building so much, sure, that I get very, very jealous of my GMing prerogatives on that front. And every time I hear people saying, you know, oh, but players can share the world building, I'm like, no. No, it's my precious. Nasser, have you got another one?
Don't over prep.
Yes, absolutely.
Like I see a lot of game masters that have tables and details that I don't think they'll ever use in the session. The like the number of candles that are in the particular in that store, or the number of gold pieces that every NPC has. You don't need all of that in your game. It's just the, it's just like you guys said, the those names, like Nandi said, the number of names, like a couple of names, a couple of places, and that's it. You can run a game just with those few things. And I think as for new GMs, it's I think they tend to over prep, but I think as they develop, they reach that point where I don't, oh, you know what? I was doing it wrong. All I needed was a few names, a few places, and maybe an encounter or two, and that's it, I'm done. That's less than 10 minutes. I got my session ready or one shot ready.
I can almost hear Mohammed Al Khan, who's our tech support. Yeah, and he's just messaged us here. Yeah, I was going to say, I can almost hear him laughing because he knows how much I love the research. It's not actually the running of the game that slows me down. I love doing settings, as I mentioned. Sure. So my world building research gets really, really slow. I've been working on a campaign setting for Chivalry and Sorcery for somewhere in the region of 20 years now. Wow. And Mo will keep reminding me that the game that I said that I would run, set in medieval Japan during Ramadan 10 years ago, is still not moved beyond the concept stage. I do know more than any non-Japanese speaker should know about the province of Hida in the 14th century, but I haven't actually run a game about it yet. I can tell you what the major crops that were grown in the different river systems were. So yeah, over prepping is a big thing. Part of my problem is I just love the research too much. Sure. But also, and this is another an interesting thing for GMs generally, it's also a delaying tactic. If you don't feel confident about running a game, you can do research. You're not actually creating anything, and you're not running a game, but you can tell yourself that you're still working towards it, and you're not really. It's a diversion and a deflection technique. So watch that in yourself. Now, I mean, there are other reasons why I didn't run one of the games that I was talking about with Mo. As a European, as an English person, a British citizen, we were talking about doing a pulp 1930s game, and as more players joined, I couldn't find a place in the world where we hadn't oppressed and colonized their people, and then they'd hard won their independence back from us. I'm just like, I would like to play a 1920s, 1930s game, but I really shouldn't be the games master for this one. So I think one of my top tips really there, and it helps on the winging it front, is an old favorite. We've been using it since the 1980s, is the names list. Keep a list of names, sure, unassigned names for characters. And that way you can have names of different flavors. You can break it up by species, by nation, by alien, you know, group. You can get tons of random name generators online that will do you different flavors of name. If you're in the modern world, a phone book is a useful resource. You know, just pick names out of that. Do they still make phone books? I haven't seen one for a while. I'm saying use a phone book, and then I'm realizing, actually, when was the last time I saw a phone book?
It's been a few years here now that you mentioned it. Yeah, I don't think we haven't had one in a while.
Yeah, and I mean, you can't browse search engines for people's details. That's one of the nice things about a phone book. You can browse it. Yeah, you know, that's me reminiscing now. I'll try and act the age of my hair color, not my beard color. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Nessa, thank you too.
Anytime, bro.
Yeah, Nessa, thank you for all that. I know that you help us out quite a bit and share and post and like and everything that we do with at VCG. And I want to personally say thank you for all that you do with promoting what we try to put out. So
we all do it for passion.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much.